Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and Manhattan. You are listening to BashaniRadio.com. New York City, always talking about everything.
Do you believe insurance companies overcharge you? Do you believe that you pay enough monthly and you should not have to pay a deductible when the coverage is needed? Unfortunately, deductibles are real. And we at We Pay All Your Deductibles offer you a warranty for about 1.5% monthly of the cost of your deductible to pay your deductible when you need it. We give back 25% back every 2 years if the time never arises. Sign up for our warranty and you will have one up on the high cost of insurance on your cars, homes, motorcycles, cell phones, and boats. We pay all your deductibles.
To the Jazz and Tech Lounge with Lady Z on Bashani Radio, iHeartRadio, and iTunes. Bashani Radio, always talking about everything from New York City. You can listen to the Jazz and Tech Lounge with Lady Z on any mobile phone or tablet device. The Jazz and Tech Lounge with Lady Z, where we explore tech and enjoy the music. Please follow us online at www.ladyze.com and on all social networks at Lady Z. That's L-A-D-Y-Z-H-E. Well, today I'm really excited to bring to you none other than Mr. David Lee Spradley. This man is one of the most prolific songwriters of today. His music has been sampled by tons of people, from Snoop Dogg to the Dog Pound to just tons of people. He has contributed so much. Currently, he is playing keys with Earl Klugh, and he has some other things coming up. He's planning an instrumental album, but I don't want to tell you everything that he's doing myself. I want my listeners, I want you, my listeners, to hear from him yourself. None other than a dear friend and my mentor, musical mentor, David Spradley. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Zeal.
Hey, how are you today?
I'm well, and you?
Oh, I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Yeah. I'm so grateful that you took the time to be on this show and to be on the Jazz and Tech Lounge, because I have been really wanting my listeners to get some of your musical wisdom. And today's topic is the makings of an iconic song. And cool. So I wanted to pick your brain, if you will, about it. The song that is a very important song to the fraternity Omega Psi Phi is Atomic Dog. George Clinton performed this song and made it a hit. It has been sampled numerous times. And how did you create Atomic Dog?
How I created it was in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
And I used a Mini Moog and a Prophet 5. These are analog synthesizers of the era. Pretty much state-of-the-art synthesizers. And that was, it was just a process of finding a good sound and working it into a musical part. So it was pretty fun to do, actually. We did some other interesting things with that song that we hadn't done before, too, regarding the reverse kick drum. So what we had done is we had recorded a forward kick drum from a unit called the Man in the Box. What we call the Man in the Box, it's actually just a rolling drum machine, or I don't know if it was rolling or a cord, but it's the kind of drum machines that were in organs at the time. Back then, they had preset rhythms. Mm-hmm. And you pick a preset rhythm, and because it was steady, we like to use it for our metronome, for our click track, as opposed to using a click track.
Gotcha.
Since we actually do have a click track, too, because we had a Sempty stripe on the tape as well, but that's too technical. So we were using this Man in the Box drum loop, which went like doot, stoot, doot, stoot, doot, stoot, doot, stoot, doot, stoot, doot. You know, that's how that was the pattern that this particular rhythm played, and the sounds were analog sounds. The kick was an analog sound, so was the snare and the hi-hat. So that was a cool beat for me to get a tempo for the song. We set the tempo with that beat, and then we recorded 6 minutes of that beat, that loop.
Oh, wow.
And that was basically what we always did when we did tracks with P-Funk. We would always record the Man in the Box first, you know, about 6 minutes of the Man in the Box. That way we had a click track that we could groove to, as opposed to just, you know, a metronome. So after we got that done, a good friend of mine, and also Vice President of Capitol Records, Ted Currier, who is a DJ from New York, was in the session at the time, and he said, "Why don't you do something crazy like flip the tape over?" I said, "What do you mean flip the tape?" He said, "Yeah, flip the tape over, and let's hear what it sounds backwards." I said, "Okay, let's flip the tape over." So we flipped the tape over, and we were amazed. Because the sound that came back was voop, voop, sh, voop, voop, sh, voop, and that's famous now.
Right.
So there you go.
Wow.
A little old drum machine created, or was the foundation for, a song that has become so popular into even 35 years later. It's still airplay. There's still airplay on the song. It's crazy.
And yeah, I mean,
I love that the guys adopted the song for their fraternity, Q Dogs.
Yeah, my brother-in-law is a Q Dog.
Yeah.
Along with some other family friends, yeah.
I have a good Q Dog story for you. playing with Earl Klue, you know, for the last 25 years, I've gotten to play a lot of places. And one of the places we played was Toledo, Ohio. And we were doing a Valentine's Day show there. And the mayor of Toledo was there and everything. It was fantastic. You know, we did a great show. He came up on stage afterwards to congratulate Earl and give him a key to the city and everything. And then he said, but while I'm up here, I want to call out your keyboard player, because I heard something about your keyboard player. And he said, "Which one?" He said, "David Lee over there, David Lee," because we had two keyboard players at the time. So I walked over there to the front of the stage, and I think Mayor Ford, I think Mayor Jack Ford was his name. Don't quote me on that because of my age. But he says, "Did you write a Tommy Dog?" I said, "Yeah, I was a co-writer, you know, myself, George Clinton, Gary Scheider." He said, "Well, I want you to know that that song is my fraternity's favorite song, and I'm a Q Dog, and I want to congratulate you, and I want to give you my gold watch." And he gave me his gold watch right off his wrist.
Wow.
I was in shock. All I could say was, "Thank you so much, sir."
Wow, like, that's incredible.
Prepared for that at all. And I was speechless, literally, you know. And it was a great moment that I'll never forget. I still have the watch, too. It's a beautiful Bulova watch.
Oh, wow. Bulova, too? Wow.
Yeah. And it was a watch that he got when he was in the House of Representatives in Congress. It's an actual watch that the representatives get when they become elected to office. You know, it's an official, like, I don't know, government watch.
Wow, that's incredible. Did you want to add anything else?
Well, I mean, the making of a song in the studio is a long process if you're doing it the way I was doing it at the time, because basically I was just laying down one track at a time.
Right.
The first track, like I told you, was A Man in a Box. So we got that down, and then I got the Mini Moog out, and I found a nice bass sound, and I started playing around with the bass line. And I didn't have one, so I had to go in the studio piano where there was a Yamaha Grand back in the studio outside of the control room. And I worked out a bass line on that piano. And I also worked out what I would consider to be my B section. And I had my two little bass lines figured out. And I went in, back into the control room, and I laid the bass lines down. But they weren't laid down traditionally. So that's the part where the music of the song kind of sounds different, because the bass line that you hear on the record is actually a component of three different sounds, you know, three different sounds between the Prophet and the Moog. Mm-hmm. And I was using both of them to create the bass line. So, that was kind of special.
Wow. So you're using three different sounds.
Well, the bass line is composed of two synths playing, you know, the Mini Moog is playing most of the melodic part of the bass line, but the bends, all those bends are made by the Prophet.
Okay.
You know, so that's kind of cool. That made it cool. That was instantly like likable. And so from that, you know, I just kept putting overdubs on. Mm-hmm. There was some other gentleman in the studio too, if I recall, my buddy Ron Wright, who played drums in my local band with me, and mm-hmm. has gone on to play drums with P-Funk. And still plays drums to this day. He lives in Florida. Mm-hmm. He was watching me do this stuff, and I said, well, you want to get a session on the song? Come over here and play this little cabasa part I've got that I would like to put on here. But it was on the Mini Moog. We used the Mini Moog for the cabasa sound. And it's the sound that goes, it goes every two bars, it goes, shh. You know, it's just 4/16th notes. And that happens every four bars. So it's kind of a part of the whisper sound. That's how I think George got inspired to actually pant on the track.
Uh-huh. You
know, because of that sound.
Oh, wow.
So Ron put 6 minutes of shh on the track for me.
Wow.
So hopefully he gets sessions for that. It's funny, when I get my union session check for Atomic Dog and residuals, like when it's in a movie or when it's in a commercial or something,
right?
I get a single scale session check for that song. $185 session.
Wow.
And I was in there for about 12 hours. You know, it was like I should have gotten like a quadruple scale check, but I got a single session check. But I was the only guy in there actually recording. Gary Scheider was there, but he was just observing.
Sheesh.
Later on, though, he put some vocals on it.
Oh, wow. So how did the lyrics for Atomic Dog come about?
Oh, George wrote the lyrics. He had been writing those lyrics for a while.
Okay.
He just needed the right track to put them on.
Oh, so you knew before you started writing this track that what lyrics were going to go on it?
No, I had no idea. I never asked George anything about what he was doing. We were just always amazed when he did what he did. I mean, he just was that kind of guy. He's a creative guy. He's so has so much energy, you know, and he listens to everything. You know, I mean, he doesn't forget a thing. He's got an amazing photogenic memory, I think, when it comes to lyrics and melodies.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that I found out later, because Ted had told me that he'd been working with this dog concept for a song lyric. And that was the night that he broke it out. And I'm glad he did.
Yeah, and then history was made.
Because the song was written in one night. It was, we could have put it out in the raw form as it was, right there with my backwards drums and synthetic bass lines and musical parts and percussion, synthetic percussion. Ted Currier actually wanted to get on the track. So he said, there's some weights here. And he started clinking the weights together to make a metallic sound that we ended up using for a backbeat, I think. And we did it in reverse too, because we were doing everything in reverse that night. That was pretty amazing too, that it ended up making the track. And I always did the music, because that's what I did. I did the music.
Right.
Bones would come in and put his lyrics on it, and Gary would come arrange the vocals. That was a normal working operation for us on all songs. Another great song, Dog Is Man's Best Friend, we did like that. Another great song, Generator Pop. Those were all a very rich creative moment in that time period. It was pretty fascinating to be there.
Wow. So you mentioned you had the Prophet, the Mini Moog, you had the weights,
the
man in the box.
5 pound metal weight. Two of them. Yeah, the man in the box. Yeah. That was pretty much it.
Wow. So that's incredible. So what was it like working with George?
One of the best experiences of my life. You know, what can I say? He's an amazing person.
So I want to go back in time. Why did you choose the keyboard?
I didn't choose it. It chose me. When I first moved to the States from Korea, my dad brought me when I was a little kid. He took me to his mom's house in Nebraska, a farmhouse that had a big porch, the kind of porch that goes all the way around the house, or at least three quarters. Anyway, there was an old upright piano on one of the porches, and Dad told me, because I don't really recall doing it, but he said, when I saw that piano, I went up to it, and I looked at it, and I was just intrigued by it, and then when I played a note on it, I was really intrigued, and I looked at him and asked, like, can I play on it? And he said, yeah, go ahead. And he said, I started pounding on the thing, and I just was in heaven for a good 3 or 4 minutes. So that was my first experience with the piano, and it was one of the first things I saw when I got to this country, or when I got to this family house. And he adopted me, so I got to see a lot of houses with pianos, but that was the first one.
Wow. So how did you gravitate to being a funk master, a jazz and funk master? How did that happen?
I didn't actually gravitate. It just happened because I was there doing it, you know? Mm-hmm. I got a call one night from Greg Riley at the Disc. It's a studio in East Detroit, which is a suburb of Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing a lot of session work for him, mostly like pop stuff and like country western, you know, some rock stuff I was doing there. He called me one night and said, hey, I got this session. It's different than what you've been doing, but you know, it's a cool group, and their keyboard player missed their flight from New York, and they got to get this track done. They need a keyboardist. Can you come do it? I said, sure. I went down there that evening. I met Donnie Sterling, who was a producer, who's the leader and artist in his own right. Donnie Sterling and Sterling Starship. He's had his own career with that, and he was a producer on the track. And I met him, and he said, hey, I need some keyboards. Do you hear anything for the thing? And he played the track, and I was blown away, because I was totally not familiar with the funk at the time. And when I heard the music, I was like, wow, this is, what a great groove, what a great bass line. And I thought, man, I hear some stuff I could play on that. And they said, well, go out to the piano and let me hear what you're thinking about. And I went out there and I started plinking around, which is, you know, just checking to get the right key and make sure I'm in the right key and stuff. And then I found the groove, and he stopped immediately. He said, wait a minute, hey, let's start at the beginning. He said, let's go back to the beginning so we can
get that on tape.
Put you in record. And I said, hey, I'm just learning the song. He said, don't worry about it. I said, what do you mean? He says, don't worry about the form. We can punch you in later if we need to. I said, okay. I hadn't been used to recording like that. Used to writing an arrangement out, writing a chart, you know, so that I could play the thing from top to bottom, right? So,
right.
The piano track went down, and he said, you hear anything else? I said, yeah, the synth tracks. I hear synth tracks. I laid three synth tracks that were in harmony with each other, and he was loving it, and I was loving doing it. And about 3 hours later, he said, "Man, that is smoking. Thank you very much." And he said, "I'll get you a session check with the AFFM." I said, "Oh, that's fantastic. This is a legitimate deal." He said, "Yeah, we're doing albums. I mean, we got, George has got multiple albums." I said, "George?" He says, "Yeah, George Clinton. That's who the artist is." I said, "George Clinton?" And I was not sure, you know.
You're like, are you just gassing me up?
I thought maybe he was a country western artist, but the music was a country western. So I was a little gassed, but he said, "Don't worry, you'll get paid and everything will be cool. And we want to, I'm sure we're going to need you, your services some more in the future." I said, "Cool." I went home. The song ends up being the single for Glory All Stupid, which came out in 1979. That album came out. That was the single. And the single was called The Big Bang Theory. That's the first song I played on with Pete Funk.
Oh, wow.
I didn't even know it was Pete Funk.
Oh, wow.
I was ignorant. I mean, really, I was an ignorant young musician, you know. It was just crazy. But I had practiced a whole lot, so my chops were up, and I was playing really well. And the next day, I get a call from George Clinton himself, who I did not even recognize when he called me on the phone. He has a kind of a deep bass, rough speaking voice, so... Mm-hmm. He said, "I want to meet you." I said, "Really?" I said, "Okay, I'll meet you." He says, "I got an apartment in Southfield, and I want you to come up, and I want to meet you." I said, "Okay." So I went to the apartment, and nice apartment in Southfield, which is a nice suburb, and knocked on the door, and the door opens, and there's this guy wearing a sheet, and he's got all this stuff in his hair. And I said, "I think I have the wrong apartment. I'm looking for George Clinton." He said, "That's me." I said, "Oh, my God."
Wow.
Come on in. And I came on in, and the apartment was empty. There was nothing in it. It was just a carpet. That was it. It was a brand-new apartment. He hadn't moved in evidently yet. But he was going to, because, as the story unfolds, we sat down on the rug in this brand new apartment with no furniture. Mm-hmm. And he said, "You know, I really like them keyboards you put on this track. I'm going to put this track out. And I want to know if you want to do a lot of work in the studio." And I'm like, I'm not cha-ching, but ding. And cha-ching. Because I knew the ding would be I'm get to do something I've always wanted to do and get paid for it as well. So he said, "I got a production deal with Capitol. I put out like 5 or 6 or 7 albums, and I need tracks done. And I can have you in the studio 5 days a week if you want." And I said, "Really? I'm all in." And that was how it started.
Wow.
So I played on Parlette. I played on Felipe Wynn. I played on Sweatband. I played on some Brides of Funkenstein, maybe, Parliament album, Funkadelic album, Bootsy kidnapped me one day, and just literally kidnapped me from the studio in East Detroit, where I told you about before, and
right.
Cincinnati!
Cincinnati?
For like a month, man, we were recording down there at the Fifth Third studio in Cincinnati. A good studio down there at Bootsy's house.
There's
a farm down there. So I just hung out with Boots, you know, and then we came back to Detroit.
So what do you like most about your music career and everything that has transpired?
What I like most about it is that I've been able to stay in. It's been good enough to me. You know, Atomic Dog is a wonderful testament to my legacy, okay? That song has kept me in the music business.
Wow.
That's probably, you know, it was a blessed night that night. It was one of those nights.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to explain it to you, but I've had performance nights like that with different groups, but most recently, of course, with Earl, where the band is just smoking. Everybody's just killing it.
Right, so, right. Everybody's in the zone.
And that was what happened that night, too. You know, the night of the making of Atomic Blonde.
Wow.
And so, there was more work done on it later on. I mean, Bernie Worrell came in and played the Prophet 5 synthesizer line at the beginning of the song. And several ad-libs throughout the song. So his personality is infused in that song, too.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dennis Chambers came in and played drums on it. Everybody couldn't get with the backwards beat. The backwards kick was good, but George said he needed something that he could feel.
Right.
The downbeat. Because he never could feel the downbeat on that song.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think if anybody else played on it. Gary Scheider did an amazing job with the vocal arrangement, which I sang. That's one of the few songs I ever sang on with George's crew, because I usually, once I did the music, I was like, I'm out of here, but this time, on this particular night, I was there doing something else, and George and Gary, Gary came in and said, George wants me to put these vocal arrangements on the dog. So stick around, you can get a session if you sing on it. I said, yeah. So I did. And I sang way too loud on the song, and you can hear it in the mix, because Gary kept saying, hey, Dave, you're hogging the mic, man. Step back a little bit. It would be me, Gary, and maybe Sheila, who else? Jeanette. Those singers, the usual P-Funk singers Gary picked. He would pick different people for different parts, obviously.
Right.
Both voice ranges and sounds. And luckily, I got to be in on the lead, on the lead melody. And I sang the shit out of it, I must say. Ray Davis did the Bow Wow Wow Yippee. He was the bass singer. He did the Bow Wow. May he rest in peace.
Wow.
He was a great guy.
Mm-mm-mm.
That song was a unique song, and it's probably one of two songs that, or three songs that I sang vocals on a P-Funk artist.
So what do you want people to know about you?
Whatever they want to find out. I'm an open book, pretty much. I've had the same phone number for 40 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
My final question is, what upcoming projects are you working on?
The thing that I'm working on that's got me most excited is my long-awaited and long-requested instrumental album, which I've been writing these songs for many years. I have a compilation of songs, new songs that I've written, and songs that I wrote 20 years ago.
Is Aaron's ABCs going to come on that?
Well, Aaron's ABCs is already recorded and released on the Fabulous LP.
Okay, okay.
Elaine's debut LP CD. But we put two instrumentals on that CD, and one of them was Aaron's ABCs, which is a stellar instrumental. I'm not thinking of re-recording it. I may include it as a bonus recording on the album, just because it's such a great song and the performances are great by all the people that played on it. Basically, the cream of the crop of Detroit musicians is all over the Fabulous album, and the album before that, The Edge, put out The Pursuit of Fatness. Both of them are actually available still on CD Baby.
Yeah, and they're available if you go to dleesmusic.com. That's dleesmusic.com. You can purchase those albums there.
And so the instrumental album, I'm meeting with Daryl Wakefield next week to map out some of the tunes we're going to do. And I already have my rhythm section, which once again will be cream of the crop of Detroit guys.
Ron Otis, Ray Burton.
Well, how did you guess? those rhythm tracks will go down soon, and hopefully on the instrumental album will be on its way to editing and overdubbing. And then I've also had this other little pet project that I started about 4 years ago. with a fantastic vocalist, Cherry Black, who I just happened to meet by chance because she was the singer that was going to do the demo of this song I wrote called Rosé on the Roof, an EDM dance song, 127 BPM, but it's kind of catchy. So I have a good friend now and a talented engineer musician named Salar Ansari remixing it, and we're working on the remix now. So I hope to get that finished and out there by the second week of November, when I'm performing at Kiawah Island with for the Weekend of Jazz with Earl Klue. I have my own show that I get to do there on Saturday night, and that's where I want to debut this new version of the EDM song featuring Cherry Black called Rosé on the Roof. Roof. So yeah, it's going to be a good, fine. 18 has been a great year. Got my publishing back on Atomic Dog. It's amazing. I took 35 years to get it back, but I got it back. And now
Awesome.
I'm just recycling the money from it right back into the music.
Right.
You ask me what's the best thing about it. Well, that's an example how that song is able to keep me performing and writing and in making music. You know, I don't ever want to stop, really.
Right.
You know, but at some point, I'm going to have to probably wind down, but I don't ever plan on stopping. I still play the piano in my house almost regularly. My latest acquisition is the song When I'm 64 by the Beatles, because I am 64. I figured I better learn it. 64 years.
Wow. David, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on the Jazz and Tech Lounge with Lady Z. I want my listeners to connect with you online. They can go to dleesmusic.com and check you out. And so you've been listening to the Jazz and Tech Lounge with Lady Z, where we explore tech and enjoy the music. And we are on Bashani Radio, iHeartRadio, and iTunes. Bashani Radio, always talking about everything from New York City. Do you have any final words, David?
Thank you very much for this opportunity to talk with you. And I hope that a lot of people get something out of this. And I look forward to a repeat performance somewhere down the road. Also looking forward to your album that I know is out. And
yeah, it's coming. Yeah.
That I want you to keep working on, because it's going to be real nice.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the love and support. Absolutely. Thank you so much, David.
Have a great day.
Stay locked in and fully loaded. Bashani Radio and Verke Radio. They said we couldn't do it, but we global now. Worldwide. Boom. In your face.